Welcome to YA Book Jam, the monthly book club podcast with your hosts Arden Jones
and JL Bleakley.
I can't believe it. This is our last episode of season two. Like, we're here already. How quick has it gone?
So quick.
But also, I feel like I've been gone for ages. I missed last month and I'm so gutted that I missed that because it was such a good episode. You and Annalise.
I don't believe
it
you.
Was.
I think you didn't want to read a romance.
But not just because of that. It wasn't something I was like, I cannot wait to read this, but I was really looking forward to recording this episode with you both. And I think, like, you and Annalise made such a great team.
Thank you.
So I was just like, oh, who? They don't even need me anyway, so whatever. This time, we're here for something a little different. I've been wanting to read this book for so long. It's been on my TBR since it was published in 2023, and it was written by the award-winning author and ex-celebrity journalist Benjamin Dean. So, welcome to How to Die Famous. Let's have a read of the blurb. What would you risk to be famous? Abel is living a double life. He is Hollywood's latest prodigy, about to star in a huge blockbuster, and an undercover journalist determined to expose the entertainment industry's biggest secrets, namely the one concealing his brother's death. Catapulted into the spotlight, Abel quickly finds himself embroiled in a dark world of secrecy, scandal, and murder. When everyone has something to hide, who can you trust when the cameras are no longer rolling? Yeah, as I was reading this, I was like, this book would have been totally up Shelley's street. So it's such a shame that she's not here to chat all things fame and murder with us today. It's also told in multiple point of views, which also ticks another one of her boxes. But I also love them too. So when I started off reading Abel, and then I was like reading Orion scene, and then I was reading Ella one, and then I was into Lucky Tate's one, my YA senses were tingling. I just love delving into another character's mind and discovering what makes them tick. And this book was like absolutely no exception. I'm going to say though, personally, I just would have liked some longer chapters with the other characters because they just zoomed by so fast. But what we did get was I think we got enough. We got what we needed from them for the story, which I think just goes like in line with the theme of the book, that the characters are there for one thing, and that's for me to know all that the creator needs for me to know about them. But as I was reading each character, I was like personally really drawn into Lucky Tate. He was the most genuine and most relatable character I felt. And although I liked all four of them, for me it was Tate that gripped me the most. But I still needed a bit more. His scenes just flew by. So yeah, Jess, I think, are you a fan of multiple point of views? I feel like I couldn't remember when I was like thinking of this. And who was your favourite character? And what was it about that person that made you want to flick the pages to get to them?
I can be a fan of multiple points of view. I really liked it in One of Us is Lying. I really liked all the different points of view there. And I've actually just finished, it's not YA, but I just finished The Hunting Party by Lucy Foley. And I really liked all the different point of views in that story too. But then I've also read other books where I've not liked it. I think if there's too many points of views, I get a little bit lost. But when it's done well, I do enjoy it. I feel like I've seen this book everywhere. Like every time I go into a bookshop, the cover is so striking and the premise is so hooky. It was definitely one that I picked to read too. So I was really glad when you chose it. I'm a little bit like you. I think Lucky might have been my favourite point of view. I liked them all. They all gave a different perspective. I really like getting to know all the characters, like their true character behind the Hollywood persona, and just being able to see how it was so different to what was being portrayed. And I felt like they all had very different backgrounds, even though all being in the kind of same situation, each one had a different voice, different background. So I did enjoy that.
Yeah, it was really easy to tell them apart. Like, even though their names were the start, absolutely. It was like, yeah, they was clear, really, really well written.
I think the two I felt the most sorry for were Lucky and Ella. They were like two very different experiences with two very different mothers. And like my heart just broke for them, I think, the most. I will stop here and remind everyone that this is a podcast that has spoilers. So if the book sounds like something you think you'd be interested in,
thank you, Jess.
Please hit pause and come back. And we'll be waiting for you. Go read it, go listen to it, however you want to do it. But back to the point of views, I think the character I actually had the hardest time connecting emotionally to was Abel, but I will get more into that later. But yeah, definitely I was a big Lucky fan like you.
Yeah, I'm glad it wasn't just me. I'm with you. Like, I found Lucky's and Ella's relationships with their parents. I mean, obviously, we don't get to see Lucky with his, but the difference between them both was just like astounding. And I was just there a lot when it was with Ella's mum. I was just felt so sorry for her. Oh, but yeah, but also, what I'm sitting here like just cussing myself here because I'm like, I should have started this with your favorite part of the book. The prologue. So, another book with another prologue. Sorry, Jess. But it was a super short, right into the action, edge of your seat prologue. It took literally seconds. And I got to the end, and then I was like, what has happened here? Has Abel murdered someone? Who was it? Who are the three people he went into? Whatever place he was in there with. I definitely felt it was a really hooky opening and it left me wanting more. So, for me, the prologue did its job. However, after finishing the book and then rereading it, I was a bit like, was he an unreliable narrator there? Because something happened, but not what we were kind of led to believe here. I got to the end and I was like, but they all had this plan. So why was it such a shock? And this is a spoiler right at the beginning. But like, maybe Abel wasn't expecting to see Lucky laying there in a pool of his own blood. But then faking his death and blaming it on Lake was the plan. I love the prologue. I'm like, did we need the prologue? I don't know. So where were you with this? Have I totally just got all this mixed up? So brace yourself, listeners. She's about to go
No. Yeah, another prologue. How about that?
How many have we had?
Like, I feel like
the last
I
three?
genuinely feel like every book I pick up now has a prologue. So they're just
They're coming back. They're coming
they're
back.
coming for me. But do you know what? I've actually enjoyed the past few prologues I've read. Now that Annalise
Yay.
described it as like the author's promise to the reader, like that's just so beautiful in a way that only Annalise Avery can describe anything.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
I'm sort of maybe converting to the church of prologue, but I think like anything can be done well and anything can be done badly. So I think I like a good prologue, and this was a great prologue. This did not disappoint at all. It was exactly what I need a prologue to be. It's like fast paced, straight into the action, no info dumps. You're just and something that just makes you want to be like, oh, I need to know what happens next in the story. And that's how I felt with this. I shared some of your confusion with like the ending versus the prologue. It made it seem like Abel had killed someone or Abel had let somebody die. And as soon as we were, then went into these four points of view, I thought, okay, it has if four of them went in, it has to be one of these points of view that has died. And so I was kind of reading it, wondering how this was going to play out, like looking for signs of Abel maybe not getting along with one of them or like some sort of tension. Because in the prologue, he didn't seem remorseful.
No, that's right.
And he didn't seem upset that the person had died either. So I was just a little bit confused. I didn't know what to expect, but I at that point I feel like the author's promise to us was that there's going to be some big twists in this book. So I was excited to keep reading. I will say, since you've already mentioned the end of this book at this point, I feel like I can now. I didn't feel like the end matched up to the prologue. For starters, the prologue said that four entered and three left, when actually five entered and four left. So that
Yeah.
right there didn't really add up. And I know the author was trying to make us think that one of the main four characters had died, clearly. But I just think it could have been worded maybe a little bit differently to still give that impression without contradicting the ending. And I was also a little confused at the end about Lucky's plan. Like you mentioned, like, had he not shared it with the others? Because they seemed surprised to see him lying there. Even at the end of the book, it seemed like Ella and Ryan were staring at him like, oh my, like what's happened? But they were all in this together. So wouldn't Abel and the others have known exactly what was going to happen? And also, Mila, who we'll talk about later, she was the one who took his blood, and they were all in this house together. So were they not wondering why she'd taken all this blood off him? Like, they must have known what was going to happen. And when Lucky took that recording of Blake in the trailer, that was that used for the 911 tape, that was well before they even had this plan. So then I was a bit confused as to why he took that recording. What, like, was it a just in case kind of thing? And if so, it was very convenient that all the everything that Lake said in that recording played out perfectly for what was going to happen at the end. So that kind of confused me a little bit too. It honestly, the end just left me with a lot of questions. I think this is the first time we've jumped to the end so soon in an episode. I can't actually believe it.
Yeah,
But
like
yeah, I think I was as confused as you. So yeah, I don't think you've gotten it wrong. I think we both kind of got the same reading that.
Yeah, so we were both reading the prologue, reading through, just waiting for someone to die, basically.
Yeah.
Please, someone die. Like, which one's it going to be? Yeah, that's totally where I was with it as well. But I feel like, and again, it's probably me just getting mixed up. I felt like when he took that recording, they'd already made a plan. So they hadn't. I thought they had.
I don't think they had, because I remember when he took that recording, they knew they wanted to get back at Omni, but they hadn't made this plan at the end, because it's near the end when Lucky suddenly has a new smile. He's like, I know what I need to do. And he kind of comes up with this plan that's near at the end. So I think he took the recording to try, and I was waiting to see, oh, what's he going to do with this recording? Because he's like smirking when he leaves the trailer and he has it. And I was like, oh, and he's like,
yeah,
that was like my best acting yet or something. And I was like, what's he going to do with this then? And then it's like, it's not mentioned for ages. And then they get to that point where, because they're still finding out information at that point, they didn't even have all the connections to then form the plan, unless I've gotten that wrong. But that part kind of, I just felt like it very conveniently fit in with what happened at the end.
And I think what is a really good thing to do, actually, if anyone is going through any kind of thing where there's like this power or like struggle, having that recording in your back pocket, it's such a good thing to do. So I was like awful lucky to do that. But yeah, you're right. I don't know. I thought he did have the plan, but if he didn't, then I suppose he's just waiting for the right time to use it, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked. It worked very well.
Yeah. So there was a lot. I think we've kind of gone through the plot in such a quick time there. But so let's
the expand.
Quickest podcast done. So let's talk a little bit about the plot, and we'll talk a bit more about Abel, because although it was multiple POVs and we was getting to know everybody else, it was his story. So Abel Miller is now planned to be the hot new face on the TV show Sunset High. And it's run by the production studio Omnificent, or Omni is what it's generally called throughout. But he's not just this. He's an undercover journalist on a mission to expose the production company and the part that they played in his brother's accidental death a few years back. So his brother Adam worked on the set of Sunset High, and he'd sent Abel like this mysterious message just minutes before he died. And Abel was desperate to find out what happened. And then he managed to get a part in the new series of the show that killed his brother. So, and this is the first time I've ever started a podcast with a bit of a thing where I'm like, oh, I'm not quite sure about this. But so I'm opening with a bit of a plot hole, but we are a book club. So we do have to discuss everything, all our likes and our dislikes. Not that I'm suggesting I didn't like the book, because I really enjoyed it, but straight away, and it wasn't addressed in the book unless I've just bypassed that, how did Adam get this part? It's a huge, huge TV production company. So we're thinking like Nickelodeon, Disney, Harry Ears, like they would have done their background checks. And the two people at the top of this like food chain, Lake and Jewel, that running it, are covering up huge problems, crimes, murder even. So they would have done a background check on Abel Miller. Like, surely, like, he didn't even go in with a fake ID or a fake surname. Like, I just thought he would have, as an undercover journalist, maybe become a new person. So yeah, the whole way through, I was kind of waiting for this explanation of how Abel has managed this, because to me it just felt a bit unbelievable. So all the way through it was kind of niggling at me, but it's not to take away from the storyline and the plot as a whole, which I really, really loved. But it was just that I just couldn't get my head around it. And a big part of this plot was the curse of Sunset High. And I'm here, I'm just going to get my negative thoughts out before we chat all things good about the book. And I'm interested to hear from you, because I didn't think the curse was believable enough from like a viewer general public point of view. I think if there'd been like a longer series, so if there'd have been like 5-6 series of Sunset High and someone had like died regularly throughout, or like a shorter one but maybe with like a recurring theme, it would have felt like more curse-like in style. I'm trying to think of TV shows or things that have this kind of curse, like the Strictly curse. It's a curse that brings affairs and breakups. So I was like, what is this curse? Is it just difficult, like problematic things going wrong? So we had, like, and you've mentioned her. So Mila has a mental breakdown, Penelope goes missing, and then Adam dies at the same time Penelope goes missing, which you know, he doesn't get the enough attention, obviously, either, because they're covering that up. But it's totally overshadowed by Penelope's missing status. So I get it. There was things that was going wrong, but it was like described as the most cursed TV show ever in the whole of the world. And I'm like, but only a couple of things have gone wrong. And apart from someone dying, they weren't that bad. Like, I mean, having a mental breakdown is awful. And so he's going missing, but she went missing on purpose. So it's not like she's really gone missing. Oh, so yeah, whew, I'm just going to get all this out now because, I'm just here going, oh, I feel really bad. But like I said, we're a book club. We're here to discuss everything. So, and the curse was huge. It's a huge part of the plot. And so is Abel's connection with the studio. So for me, it was like, I just wanted to know if you had any kind of similar thoughts. What did you think of Abel's reason for joining the show? And did you think, how on earth could he have got on there, knowing he's the brother of someone who was murdered by, like, the people who run the company? And tell me about the curse. Am I wrong here thinking the curse needed to be worse? Oh, I rhymed.
Whoa. Such a picture book author.
Oh, yeah.
Your new title. So I'm here to balance the scales because, weirdly, the two things you've mentioned, I just took for granted and didn't really question. Although now you mention it, I didn't think about Abel not changing his last name. And yes, now that you have said that, that is a huge plot hole. And of course, they would have done a background check. I just didn't think about that as I was reading the book. I actually loved the curse element and I found it believable because Strictly didn't even enter my head. What I was thinking of, well, first of all, you can spin anything into a story when you have the press in your pocket, which Omnificent did. And what I was thinking of is, I don't know if you've ever heard about the curse of the movie The Exorcist, about how it was a cursed film site. So this is like a really famous thing in Hollywood where people say that that film was cursed because all these things went wrong during it. Like there was a fire on set. There was lots of different accidents on set. People died like through the filming or close after. They just, all those random things together.
Yeah, people and lots of things happening.
Yeah, so that's one film. Sorry. It's not six seasons. Like, yeah. It was one film and it was like, and people died like, shortly after the film. It wasn't even like during filming. The fire took place during filming and then there was like accidents where people just got hurt.
God, this is freaky.
Look it up, honestly. And so that was always in the back of
my head. I don't know, I'll be scared.
That was in the back of my head because I was like, oh, I've heard about stuff like this before. So it just made me think of The Exorcist. And also you have things like, it's a little bit different because it's long running, but you have the Macbeth play. That's meant to be cursed. Like things always go wrong when actors are doing Macbeth. So those were what were in my head, not strictly cursed. So for me, it felt believable in a fiction book that there would be a TV show that had something similar like that, where it's like lots of random different things going on that when you put them all together, you decide that it's a cursed show. So I was fine with that. I found Abel's reason for joining believable. And he'd always wanted to be an actor. And it sounded like this was going to be his path, whether his brother had been hurt or not. And, you know, they talked about how they shared. And they shared that dream that the two of them would be in Hollywood, one in front of the camera, one behind the camera. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that background story to him and his brother's relationship. It really made you see how close he and his brother were, kind of tugged at your heartstrings a bit more. And I'm just a sucker for a person with big dreams. So I didn't really question his reason.
We all have them.
I didn't question Abel going to Hollywood. It all seemed very believable to me, but I do completely understand and agree with your point about his last name. I just didn't think about the time. I could believe that a large production company could cover up a murder. I imagine, it's funny you said this name as well, but I imagine Omnificent as Disney. Sorry, Disney. But the way they wanted their stars to have these squeaky clean reputations and how they found them young and then turned them into stars. And I can absolutely believe that a company as huge as Disney could cover up a murder. Please don't come at me. If I die, Disney has done it right. It was Disney.
Take that out.
I do love Disney, I promise. I actually really do love Disney.
Yeah, just for legal reasons, by no means here is just saying that Disney have covered up a murder. She said a company as big could.
Yes.
So we are not suggesting this at all.
And they were cancelled.
This is the last show. I said this is the last show of the season.
Now you know why. Disney are chapping at my door at the minute.
Oh, no, do you know what? It's really good to hear your thoughts there because it's sometimes when you just get in your own mindset and you're just like kind of stuck in your ways, this is how I feel about it, and you can't kind of see a way out. But having someone else kind of talk about it and go, actually, yeah, this is like the, especially like with the curse thing, it's good to have like your input on that, because I totally see what you mean and can agree to a point. But what I did really love about this book was, and again, it was like, and not, I'm not saying Disney has ever done this, but it's how true it was to life, to how like manufactured celebrity life is. Like Benjamin himself is an ex-celebrity journalist, so the most perfect person for the inside scoop here. Now, we've watched as like people just are scrolling on social media, in newspapers, if anyone even reads them anymore. I mean, I don't, but like I have done, and like gossip magazines and all sorts of things. We watch the rise and fall of celebrities, and we know how the media and TV can manipulate the cast and viewers into things for ratings. And I think for this type of reality TV show, it's especially true. Like, for us, like Big Brother was like one of the first kind of shows that kind of done something like this. And we was so easily manipulated into really loving or hating a character. Like, I feel like we were all made to really like dislike Jade Goody at one point. I think she'd made a mistake on TV, and then everyone just leapt on that. It was all really high and via like news and TV, and just she was everywhere as like this awful person. And then we all fell in love with her again, and she became like the nation's sweetheart. And it was like she'd come from nothing and become one of the most famous faces on British TV. So like it totally went hand in hand with what they do at Omni. And like these production studios create characters, they exaggerate their personalities for like good TV. And like, this is why I just do not, I cannot do reality TV of any kind. Like, I can't stand like the fakeness behind it and how people's lives are out there for everyone to judge. And it's the same with, I suppose, any kind of celebrity. We're all judging them. We're all seeing things. But I feel like with reality, and like especially young reality stars, it's just so hard on them. I just can't deal with anything like reality wise. I mean, unless you've listened to previous episodes and it's just me talking about how much I love The Traitors, but like that is a game. So, you know, it's fine. But, and I live in like the biggest towery town ever. Like the club that they all went to is in the where I live. Like, so I should just be here, like loving everything reality, but I just can't bear that manufactured drama, that constant need for conflict that really drives people to view and just hate or love characters, because it just feels so hollow and so shallow. And I think this book highlighted this so incredibly well. And like, I think we all know really what we see on these shows aren't true to life. For like, really, we know there's scripts. We know a lot of it is like just heightened, and people are like saying put together because they think they'd make a good match. So can't understand, like, we all know this, but it's, why is it so easy to be pulled into these types of shows, such as like I've mentioned TOWIE, but like this, which is Sunset High, which is a very, very similar type of show. I absolutely love the drama of a fictional program or a book. Like, I love that kind of drama, but when there's like blurred lines with like real life, just like totally get me out of there. So, and like there was another nod then to reality TV, but again, so where are you with reality TV? Like, I'm here thinking I know the answer, because I feel like it took forever you to watch The Traitors. But how did you feel Benjamin addressed this life that people are thrown into? And does it make you think differently if you were like reading like a news like article about a new celebrity like relationship or breakup or like some big drama that's going on? Oh, that was a lot there. Sorry, Jen.
I want to jump in so many times. I'm like, nope, just let her finish.
I didn't realise how long I was going on for.
I'm devastated we're not going to see you in a reboot of TOWIE. Like, Arden Jones, local author.
You never know. I might be just in the background, just walking past, like, totally not realising I'm even in the shot.
I think they could do with a little, with like a local author stepping in to stir things up. I would actually watch it then, to be honest. I've never watched it before. I'm not a huge reality TV fan. I've watched some things, more American ones than UK ones. I do love The Traitors though, but I don't really think of that the same way I think of these sort of reality TV shows, because I feel like you don't really get too involved in their personal lives and that.
That's right. It's a game.
It's basically a game show, essentially. So I totally misunderstood this story, because when I was reading it, I didn't think Sunset High was reality TV. I thought it was a TV show and they just wanted the cast whose characters dated on screen to date off screen. But now that you're talking about it, I can't remember them having any character names, so it must have been reality TV. But I think in my head, I was just imagining, like, again, I can't believe you and I have said Disney so many times, but I was just thinking about something like Hannah Montana or like Descendants or something, any other US teen drama. And I think the reason I kept thinking about Disney, I'm so sorry, was because the story just kept making me think about Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears. Really showing my age now, but I couldn't help but find parallels between how she was treated by her family and the media and the world wanting to know about their relationship and like her being supposed to be being squeaky clean, but then everyone just wanting to dissect and be like, but when did you lose your virginity and all this? And it just that I just kept thinking about that as I read the story. And yeah, I've always felt bad for kids that have to grow up in the public eye, and I've never been interested in celebrity gossip because I just, like, we don't know these people. Like, we just know what we read about them online, and who knows how much of that is true. Like, most of that's fabricated. And I just think part of me just doesn't care, because I could read a whole article and it might not even be true. And I just think, like, they're real people at the end of the day. And, like, why do they owe it to us for us to know about their personal life? But I don't know if that's just me, a little old lady talking. Yeah, that's where I'm at with reality TV. But it definitely reminded me, this book reminded me a lot of real life situations with celebrities. So I think you can tell that Benjamin, like, that was his job, because he did that part of the story so well, like making it feel so true to life.
I know that we're talking about the fake relationships, but let's talk about the real relationships. Let's talk about the ones that Sunset High does not want us to talk about. So first, we are made to think that Lucky and Ryan were in a relationship and Ella was Ryan's best BFF. So we quickly discover that always not actually how it seems, and Ella and Lucky are now together, right? So, and Ryan finds out the news after seeing them like making out, being splattered all over the internet. And I was like, this is obvious, we're being pulled into something here, but I couldn't quite figure it out, like what was going on. I had figured out that Lucky and Ella were not really in like a real relationship, and it was something that Omni wanted. I knew that they was doing this because it would make sense for the ratings. There's already this massive drama, and then everyone's got to like hate one or the other. And I was like, why is Ryan not as pissed off as you'd expect? But then I was like, she's also a pro. She's been doing this for a long time. She knows what they're like, and she knows the lengths these companies go for press, good or bad. But then like a few chapters in, we then discover that actually who was really together was Ella and Ryan. They're gay and Omni are hiding this. And then we also find out that Lucky is gay and they're covering that up as well. Abel didn't realise straight away. And there he is, like totally crushing on Lucky. And then was like left questioning it as whether Lucky was flirting with him, which obviously he was. And I loved their relationship and I loved how it blossomed. And I loved just seeing how lovely they were together and how Lucky was so open with Abel and just himself. And I just thought it was written incredibly well. And like the scene when they walked out of the hotel to face the cameras for the first time, it just got me. I loved that so much. And then like earlier, what I was laughing about, like Abel had got into Lucky's room and there he is, like this most like sexiest guy in the world. And is there in a towel, leading to like some definite flirting from him. And then like he leaned in to compliment Abel, like because Abel was wearing his necklace, Lucky gave him his necklace. I was like, this is just so over the top flirting and I love it. My heart was fluttering. But then I was like, is Lucky going to end up like this really toxic person? Because he seems really, really overconfident. And then as they was going outside, he seemed to like throw Abel this like curveball as if he was testing him like at the paparazzi. And I was like, this is a red flag. I'm not gonna like Lucky. And I was already like drawn into him. And I was like, Abel, you need to stay away from this guy. And then the further on we got, the more I was falling in love with Lucky again. And we found out like he's just quite, he's going through so much. Like his mother has died, which is Omni's fault. They'd tipped off paparazzi. They were responsible for the paparazzi chasing his mother. And so it completely changed my perspective on him. And I fell in love with Lucky Tate and his and Abel's lovely blossoming relationship. So were you team Lucky and Abel? And I was just so annoyed at like how obviously homophobic Omni were in like keeping all the cast in like in the closet, and in this like the current situation, the way the world is, I was just like, oh, it's just awful that this can happen. So where was you with that?
They were just such a good antagonist because you just got so angry with them, you wanted to bring them down, and they did feel like this just giant that could not be slayed. Like they felt untouchable. And so I thought Omni was an incredible antagonist, and I think Benjamin did really great with the writing with that, because we all hated them. I found Lucky and Abel's relationship I liked their relationship. I actually found it more believable than Ella and Ryan's. I just felt like they had better chemistry, which was odd because Ella and Ryan was the kind of, they were the more established relationship. Or maybe that was why, like maybe Lucky and Abel were like kind of still in the first throes where it's like really flirty and like will they won't they, like maybe that made it feel more like there was a lot more chemistry. But they definitely, like same as you, they had my heart fluttering, and I always got really excited when it got to their chapters, and I think that's why I liked being in Lucky's point of view, because I wanted to see what was going to happen next there. I can't say I felt red flags towards Lucky. I didn't think with his like instant flirting with Abel, I wasn't like, oh, he's overconfident. I just saw that as like his mask for how much he was hurting, where it's kind of like, okay, let me switch into this character because I can't deal with what's going on in my real life.
Absolutely. I totally 100% agree with you on that. Like after reading and getting to know him.
My issue was that like you maybe saw it as a red flag. Mm-hmm. I just saw it as so incredibly convenient that Abel came along and he was like, oh, I'm just kind of like this geeky guy who's like just strolling in me. He's like the hottest guy in the world. And like, oh, I can't believe he likes me. And I'm just like, oh, course he does. But this is my problem with every romance book, where I just think like it all just came too easily, and it's like,
yeah,
for Lucky to be like head over heels for Abel from the get-go, I was like, come on, like make us work for it a little bit. But I do love a slow burn. Excuse me, I do love a slow burn, so I don't know if that was just my preference. My issue with Lucky and Abel actually wasn't anything to do with their relationship. I really liked that aspect. My issue was with how they reacted with the girls being terrorized. I just didn't feel like Lucky was protective at all over Ryan or Ella. I know he was going through his own trauma and his own grief, but it just struck me as odd that they were portrayed as these close friends. They were the only people in the world who understood what each other were going through. And when the intruder broke into Ryan's house, Lucky and Abel just didn't seem to react much. Like I was waiting for her to come back to the hotel and for them to be like storming in the room and being like, what happened? And I wanted to see that kind of like fierce loyalty. It didn't feel like a found family to me. Not really until the end. I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if the whole idea with the writing behind this was to kind of portray that they were all wrapped up in their own problems that they didn't really have the capacity to care as much about each other's problems. But I would have liked to have seen more of them kind of looking out for each other before the end of the book, because at the end they're this very kind of tight cohesive team, and I would have liked to have seen evidence of that before we got to that point. I just would have liked to see their compassion towards each other and that bond that they all had a little bit earlier in the story.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's not, thinking about it now, see, that hadn't even crossed my mind, but as you've said it, I'm like, yeah, that totally makes sense. And I think, well, I wonder actually if it's because of all the multiple points of view that we have, and they're all quite short chapters generally, and the book doesn't feel like overly long, that we just didn't have enough time for that. So it's maybe, like, we have to just get the story told. And like, that's the thing, like with a lot of published books now, that we are rushing through them. Like people's finding it hard to like be able to concentrate for so long on like a longer book, that we're now told we need to just get what we need to get done and get it out. But I do feel like we really could have delved into their relationships and the friendships a bit more. I totally agree. But I do think that when Abel came along and then he was like, you know what, they've killed my brother, because everyone was like got to turn against him because they discovered he was this undercover journalist, when they started looking out for each other. And then maybe it just needed that big shock for something like that to happen.
I just felt like Ryan felt like her life was threatened, which is a serious thing.
Yeah.
Lucky had lost his mum and he knew it was Omni's fault. So essentially they had killed his mum, and like that's such a major thing, to the point where he can't even function without alcohol. Mm-hmm. I just felt like they all saw how much each other were hurting. I don't know. I fully expected when that happened with the break-in for the guy, for Abel and Lucky's reaction to kind of be this fierce, like slip into this protector mode. And I was just quite surprised when it didn't happen.
I don't know. I suppose there's a crossover of trying to be too stereotypical, like male side in the day. Like,
maybe.
I don't know. You do have to kind of be careful with things like that as well. Like, because Ryan was a really strong character.
That
was scary as hell, like having someone do that. But I feel like I feel like Ella would be the one that would have just gone, you know what? Don't do this to Ryan.
And I didn't need them to save the day. I just wanted them to be shocked and enraged.
Yeah.
just wanted to see that. I didn't need them to then step in and be the ones to take care of it. I just wanted to see that kind of gut reaction of like, how dare they do that to you kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that was just my preference.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. I just feel like there's a lot of like what Omni expect from them. How to act inside and outside of like the cameras or inside and outside. Yeah. Like, does that even make sense? But, and it's, I think they just never know what is, I think there's like what is real and what isn't real. And I think, you know, it just must be really hard. But there is so much to this story. Like I've mentioned it, we're in like so many different points of views, four different points of views. Most of the time, we do get a couple of extra ones, a couple of points later on in the story. But, we've learned how awful Ella's mum is, and she's got this huge pressure on her to be this next big star. Like, she's living for her mum. Her mum basically like abuses her financially and just also verbally, and she's awful. And like Omni are now pressurizing her to sign this contract to be the lead in the show, which means she replaces Ryan as kind of like the lead, the main character. And Ryan is like being stalked, and so are the rest of the cast. Like, the cast then start getting stalked as well. Like, the drama that is inflicted on these characters is so much. And then when Lucky goes off to rehab, the paparazzi are there waiting because, of course, they've been tipped off. It makes total sense why, like, this can send someone totally, like, batshit crazy, which brings me to Mila and Abel tracking her down. I'm not here to question why Shirley moved to Malibu from LA. If you want to escape celeb life, I'm like, go to Utah or go, like, somewhere else completely. This was the start of Abel. Just get that, discovering these breadcrumbs and just like putting it all together. And as much as I'd love to, because there's so much about this book, we just don't have like the time to talk about everything. But we do discover like later that Mila has been living with Penelope, who's the one that went missing. And she now has a complete new look and identity. She's now Olivia, who is now what we call Liv. And together, they and the Omni Gang work together to bring the production company down. Mostly Lake down, because not only is Lake this just awful, toxic, narcissistic twat, he's also a murderer. It was him who killed Adam. I mean, I think we kind of would have got to this ourselves and realised this ourselves, but we do discover what happened. So Lake had been blackmailed throughout this by Stephen, who was like a hotel employee, like hotel manager. I'm not sure his role. But he caught it on the security cameras and totally used Adam's murder to his financial advantage. And then there's Casey, who was a friend of Adam Miller and also the hotel employee, because everyone in this company, in Omnificent, used this huge like Beverly Hills like hotels where they stay all the time when they're filming. And everyone is there, but apart from like Lake, he's got his own house in Beverly Hills. So everyone is there, like wanting to get to the truth. There's like a new Scooby gang in town. So I was all there for this to happen. So yeah, that was kind of like a really quick breakdown of the plot. But was you there thinking, how on earth are all these people here now going to work together to pull this off and bring Lake, Jill and Stephen down? Like, you'd mentioned earlier, like the tape that Lucky had done, and we was like, what is he going to do with that? But did you have any idea what lengths they would actually go to get Lake discovered for being a murderer?
I think that needs like a slow clap for how much you've recapped. covered a book there. Oh, I mean, how much did you just want Lake to get his comeuppance?
He was just so awful.
He was such a believable character. Like,
yeah.
And this is kind of taking a little sidestep, but I've just realized I never really mentioned it, and it was something I really, really liked. And it kind of does tie into Lake. I really liked the sort of conflict between Ryan and Ella, where Ella was feeling very pressured to sign this contract, but that contract would essentially be pushing Ryan out of a job. And I really liked that tension of, I need to do this for my career, and my mum is really pressuring me to do this. But if I do this, I'm going to hurt the person I care about most. And I loved that storyline. I thought that was such a real and raw dilemma to be in. And I'm sure that happens all the time in Hollywood. And I just, it was like one of those impossible situations. I'm like, whatever she does, it's going to end terribly for her. And that was, of course, Lake who had, like, orchestrated all of that. Because he just seemed to just go through these young starlets, like, just groom them into their part and then chuck them to the side when he was done with them. I like the undercover report aspect of Abel's story, but this is where I found it hard to connect to Abel. I found it really difficult to swallow what he was doing to his co-stars. The fact, like, him selling their information, not selling, but him giving their secrets and their private lives to Hannah, who was the editor for the newspaper that he was reporting to. And when you talk about Lucky getting hounded by the paparazzi when he was going to rehab, like, that was Abel who leaked that. It wasn't Omni.
I thought it was Hannah. No? Have I got that wrong? Hope? No.
That was the last thing that Abel gave to Hannah, was the information that Lucky was going to rehab. And things had just, like, really heated up between him and Lucky. I just felt like, what a betrayal, like, to do that. At the start of the story, Abel's life had been turned upside down by Omni. He didn't know for a fact, but he heavily suspected that Omni were responsible for his brother's death. So that's where he was going into this. And I maybe could have understood it a bit more if, when he got there, Ella and Ryan and Lucky were maybe a little standoffish with him. And maybe he was like, oh, they're too good for me, like, Hollywood, it doesn't matter, like, maybe it would have been easier morally to do it. But the fact that they were all so lovely and so welcoming to him and so protective of him from the get-go, and he still was giving away all this personal information about them. And he could see, like, from the beginning of the story how tortured Lucky was, to the point, like, it was so obvious to everyone that he was drinking himself into oblivion. He could see how terrified Ryan was. He could see how, like, Ella was just falling apart. And for him to not, there was no sort of moral dilemma in the book. Like, he just was giving this information out because he was like, oh, it's the only way to get the truth about my brother. But I would have liked to have seen Abel struggle with that a bit more and be like, oh, like, I feel really bad doing this. But that just didn't seem to be there. And for me, when they were calling him in to confront him, I was kind of like, oh no, it's all gonna come, like, out now. And I was like almost feeling uncomfortable reading it. I'm like, he's busted, they all know, like, they're all gonna have this massive fight. And it's like the second sentence in, he's like, they killed my brother. And everyone's like, oh, well, in that case, like, it was just like, poor Abel, it's cool. And it's like, this guy's just telling all your secrets. Anyway, I really struggled with that part of it, and how quick I wanted to kind of see a fight between them, a bit of shouting, maybe Lucky storming off because he was the last one who he had kind of sold stuff about, and after everything going on between them. And then we could have had Abel sort of learning from his mistake. You would have seen a better story arc, I think. I just don't feel like Abel was ever really made to, like, take responsibility for his actions, for the things that he did that weren't right. But that was just a side problem that I had with it. But I liked how they all came together. I liked how they found out the clues and pieced together what happened. I do wish that some of these side characters, like Stephen and Casey, and maybe even Hope to a certain extent, maybe just appeared a little bit more earlier in the book or throughout the book, where they're just kind of like a presence that's there. And it would have been easy to do with Casey and Stephen because they're in and out of the hotel all the time. And they are mentioned, but I just would have liked them to have them mentioned a little bit more, so we kind of, we didn't have to think, like, oh, who was that person again? I feel like I haven't really answered your question.
It's fine. It's because this is the thing. We've got these questions, but they lead on to us thinking all sorts of different things. And it's just normal to go down a different route.
You asked how I thought they were all going to pull this off. I didn't know.
Okay.
I didn't know how they were going to pull it off. I
don't know.
But I just felt like it was making me think about all these other things that I had going on with the book.
I'm with you. I had no idea either. Yeah, I couldn't sit there and think, oh, I think this is what they're going to do. I think with the recording, I was like, obviously there's going to be some kind of framing going on with this, or there's no point taking it to the police or anything. No one's going to do anything. So, yeah, I was like, he's done this for a reason, but I don't know what for. But what it was for was, like, the biggest plot twist ever and a revenge plot worthy of an Oscar. So they all broke into Lake's home. Here I go again. I'm just going to say everything about what happens here in a short in a short paragraph. So they all broke into Lake's home. They planted evidence of the murder of Penelope, although we all now know she's alive and well. But another murder, and it had to be my favourite character, didn't it? Lucky Tate. No. Earlier in the story, like I said, Lake attacked Lucky, and Lucky had voice recorded this. And then he took that to the home of Lake, spilled his own blood all over the floor and over a knife, and the gang framed Lake for Lucky's murder. And I had no idea this is what was going to happen. I think it was so clever. Like, then Lake is arrested and charged with murder. And then Jill and Stephen are caught up in the whole cover-up of everything. So all the people that have done bad stuff are being held accountable. The gang did good. But then what we're left with is Lucky having to do a Penelope and create a whole new identity. And I was like, oh, what's happening? Like, I don't know about you, but everything just went so fast. And I was like, why? I know obviously he'd faked his own death, but like, why did we come up with this? So we've now got like a couple of people that have got a different identity. Actually, three people in the book that's got different identities. Hope pretended to be Natalie, and Lake's pretending to be someone else, and Penelope's pretending to be someone else. So I was like, wow, it's like a recurring theme. But like, when the police turn up, when I think it was Abel was in the house, my heart was beating so fast. I was all over the place. Because, like, Abel had to disguise himself as Lake, drive his car out of the home and then back again before the police arrived, because Lucky had called the police while he was at their home, played the recording over the phone so it sounded like it was happening, and then had to wait for the police to arrive. And in that time, they had to then all escape the house. Abel had to get in the car disguised as much as he could as Lake, drive off, give enough time to dump a body and cover it up, come back in the house, clean up a little bit as much as he could, I think, because it was an attempt of cleaning. And I was like, how long will these police take it? Like, surely you can't do this in like 3 minutes. In LA, the police would surely arrive quick to this huge, most famous person.
Maybe it's budget
in
cuts.
The world. Yeah. But I was like, yeah, I'm not sure if this is possible. But anyways, aside, I think that was such a clever kind of revenge plot. And I was so glad that Lake got his comeuppance, yeah. And I was totally there for that. But then we're all left on this cliff edge. Like, this concert, like, so much drama. Like, it was so hard to keep up and just, like, no, because I was one from when I was here, then I was over there, then I was back again. And then we've got Hope Waters, who worked on the set when Penelope was on the show. And she was, like, someone who was, like, so desperate for fame. And then at the end, the very last chapter is her chapter. And she just gives, like, it's all this whole sort of tell-all about what happened. When Penelope went missing, Hope didn't get a part because Lake made her feel really, really awful. So she came up with a plan, and it was to become Natalie, which was Ella's personal assistant, and then start stalking them all from the inside. I don't know about you. I was like, I'm not sure how much that was needed. But I just was like, I think Omni could have just done this themselves without these extra people, because at the end I was like, oh, we've got a chapter of this other person, and I was just a bit like, I'm not sure. But I feel like it was written because it was left on like this huge massive cliffhanger. Hope had followed the new Scooby gang and was looking through the window and realized that dun dun dun, Lucky is still alive and he's got a whole new identity. He's now like got blonde short, like bleach blonde short hair, and looks completely different. And I was like, okay, so we're here. There could be a sequel. But overall, I loved the characters. They were so lovable. And I think the plot was really gripping. And it feels like something that could really, really happen. I think we spoke a lot about like the whole plot side, but how were you with how it all kind of tied up to bring down Omni? And what was your thoughts on the Hope Waters cliffhanger at the end?
Wow, where do I start? That was a lot. Okay, first of all, I had the same thought as you about how he could have driven the car long enough to be enough time to dispose of a body, but also be back in time before the police got there. Because it's hard to dispose of a body. And if you want this body to never be found as well, it's not just like you're driving out somewhere, yeah, dumping a body and coming back.
If you've watched Yellowstone, just at the train station, is what they say.
If there's going to be a police investigation, you need to have been away long enough where they would believe, okay, this person could have properly gotten rid of this body to a state where it wouldn't be found. I had a few issues with the plan. My first issue was how well it went. Nothing really went wrong with the plan at the end. It was almost like watching Ocean's 11 or something, like watching this whole heist thing, just everything just fall into place exactly how it should happen. You did have the moment, I suppose, when Abel was sort of hiding in the bedroom from Lake, and that was a little bit exciting, and leaving the bag out. But then I wanted Lake to actually find, like, I wanted something to go wrong in their thing at the end. Also, I'm not talking from experience, just as I was not talking about from experience about how to dispose of a body, but it's really hard to fake a crime scene. So to have the blood splatter in a way that the person has actually been killed, to have the blood on the knife in the way that it was actually used to stab someone. If you stab someone, you would...
Have you studied forensics?
A little bit. For books.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. There's a lot of things in the plan where I'm just like, that would never have worked. That would have been obvious. They would have figured it out. But none of that really matters because of what happened with Hope. And I think I was happy to kind of cast a blind eye to how far-fetched the end was and how perfectly it all went. These people who are complete amateurs. Apparently you just need to watch a YouTube video to draw blood from someone in a safe way that's not going to harm them in any way and draw enough blood for a crime scene. All you have to do is watch YouTube, guys.
To be fair, I think YouTube covers a lot, but yeah, do not take it in real life.
Don't try that at home. No! Don't try that at home, ever. And it wasn't even like Lucky was a bit like woozy or anything after. It's just like, oh yeah, I should take my blood, watch YouTube, it was cool. I would have been okay with all of that because I just wanted Lake to have, I wanted him to be caught so badly and I wanted them to get the revenge on him so badly that I was almost willing to give up on needing that to be realistic. I do just kind of wish there'd been some sort of hiccup or something that went wrong and then they had to kind of scramble back and get back in the end and make it work in the end. But it all fell into place far too easily for me. I actually loved the twist of Hope being Natalie because that is the only twist in this book I did not see coming.
Oh, yes, I love that Natalie. I felt like everything else was supposed to be, yeah.
Yes, I love that Hope was Natalie. Do you know what I actually wish had happened? Because the only problem with the way this has all ended, because that's the epilogue, and there isn't a sequel, the problem with this is now that Hope knows and that she is, it's very clear from her reaction to this that she's going to tell everyone she's seen him. It means that Lake is now going to be set free because no one's died, so he can't be arrested. So, like, it means Omni is going to be fine in the end. They can probably just open back up again. It will all come back badly on Lucky and Ella and Ryan and Abel. They'll probably get arrested for entering his home. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so they're going to be the ones that suffer for all of this. So we don't actually get that happy ending of Omni have been brought down. So I felt a little bit robbed when I read the epilogue. I was like, so none of this is actually going to have worked out. And I kind of wish that Hope had shown up during that kind of, I don't want to say home invasion, but like during that time that they went into his house. And I kind of wish that she had been the spanner in the works. And like to have that moment where Ella's like, Natalie, what are you doing here? And then for the all to kind of come out. And then that could have been the thing where suddenly it's all gone wrong. And then maybe... And then they have to do something to get out of that, but then still leave it where, I don't know, where Lake has been framed and he's going to have to answer for it all.
Maybe Lake could have accidentally killed Natalie at the whole...
Exactly, and they could have wrapped up that way they could have left and then that would be the news story and he'd be arrested for the murder of that because the call had been made. I liked the idea of Lucky actually getting a new persona and escaping the spotlight because I felt like he needed that because he'd been in the spotlight so much. Yeah. I didn't mind that at all. Yeah, to close off, I loved the twist of Hope being Natalie. I just wish that had come, the structure had been a little bit different in the book, but that had come a bit earlier and that wasn't the epilogue because I felt like it being the epilogue just meant that we were robbed of everything that we wanted to happen at the end of the book.
Oh, we don't want that taken away because Lake deserves it.
No, exactly. Oh. I want him to rot in prison. And I want Omni to like just go out of business. So, but I did think it was so clever having Hope be Natalie. I did love that.
Yes. Yeah, me too. Oh, wow. That was a lot. How did we get through all that? Because it was there was so much to talk about. And I could have gone into so much more about this book, actually.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot. So like, I feel like to cram it all into this one podcast, we've only needed a couple of podcasts for this one. But But thank you for reading along with me. I've been so excited to read this book. And thank you to all the listeners that have done so too. And also thank you to all that are tuning in to hear us chat all things How to Die Famous. And as I said earlier, this is our last episode of this season. So I just want to thank you all for listening for this season and preview. And if you're new to us, then hello and go back to the start. But no, it's been really, really fun. This season has been a blast, and it would have been better if Shelley was with us at the moment, but let's hope that we see her on here again soon. So for now, goodbye, and we'll see you soon. This has been YA Book Jam with me, Arden Jones,
and JL Bleakley.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to like and subscribe where you listen. You can follow us on Instagram and X at YA_bookjam and on Substack at YA Book Jam Podcast. If you're a publisher and have books coming out this year that you think would be interested in, you can email us at yabookjampodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow Shelley on Instagram, X, Blue Sky and TikTok at Shelley Mac Books. To watch Arden interview authors and illustrators, check out Kidlit Live on YouTube and follow on Instagram at Kidlit Live. You can also follow Arden on X, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Arden Eliza Jones.
And you can follow Jess on Instagram, Blue Sky, and TikTok at JL Bleakley. Goodbye!
Bye!